You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Alan Adamson.
You know, marketing has always been based on you ever wonder why and smart insights, and getting to them is harder than ever.
Alan is a noted industry expert in all disciplines of branding. He is co-founder and managing partner of Metaforce.co, NYU Stern School of Business, adjunct professor of marketing, and the author of Brand Simple, Brand Digital, The Edge, 50 Tips from Brands That Lead, and Shift Ahead. Prior to Metaforce, Alan was chairman North America of Landor Associates, a global branding firm. Alan, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks for having me. A pleasure to be here.
So I usually get to this midway through the interview, but whenever I find someone else that has teaching in there as well, I'm always curious about, at this critical juncture in marketing, it's challenging to teach. I teach here at the University of Iowa at our College of Business as well. And it's an inflection point that can be tricky to navigate in the classroom.
Yeah, especially marketing, which, you know, often doesn't have an exact right answer or wrong answer, but has a methodology in how you need to think through problems or how you need to look at a situation and see perhaps fresh eyes. And as you know, everyone thinks they know what they're talking about. But when you're trying to get up in front of young people, you really need to be clear and simplify what you're trying to get across. And it forces you to make sure you can be as laser focused as possible.
Yeah. Well, and you hit on something there that was, I think, in my experience, one of the trickiest things for folks to understand, like you said, especially in marketing classrooms, but that this isn't finance, this isn't accounting. There are more than one right answer. There's a lot of different ways to come at a problem. And that can be hard to see. So how do you help students that and marketers, really, that may be grappling with that?
Yeah, I think there's no right or wrong answer. And every time you look at a success story in marketing or branding, you undoubtedly find that they have broken two or three rules you thought were sacrosanct. I think part of it is to have the courage to look at something. You ever wonder why? Why don't people do something different? I think part of marketing success are people that have looked at what is and said, gee, you know, all the big changes that have come out. You know, you ever wonder why people get a taxi by running in front of their onto the sidewalk and raising their hands and screaming when they have a powerful computer in their hand? And it took somebody, a lot of people had that idea at the same time, but getting from that little insight to developing a big brand like Uber or Lyft is easier said than done.
Yeah, well, and I think that it's really interesting to look at, talking about someone that has a career as long and storied as yours, author of multiple books. And when you are at kind of this point in the classroom where you're teaching branding, is there something that you point to that is the most different today versus when you began your career?
You know, I think the biggest challenge that I've seen over the years is that back in the good old days, and I'll refer to that loosely, you know, people, you know, when they were watching media, sat in front of a screen, maybe in their family room, maybe together. There were a couple choices, but they were not 100 choices. And, you know, they sometimes paid attention to what you were saying, and maybe even they even gave you the benefit of the doubt. They believed you. But of course, now when you watch people viewing, you know, it's unlikely they'll be in the family room looking at a big screen. They might be there for big events, but more likely they'll be multitasking, you know, looking at a phone screen, answering emails between watching a video. And so everyone has attention deficit disorder. Everyone is trying to multitask. There's a belief that's become prevalent that if you're really successful, you're doing, you know, five things at once. And if you're not overbooked and super busy, if you're not at the gym on the elliptical answering emails and watching CNBC, well, then you're not really serious about business.
Yeah, boy,
but,
that's...
You know, I don't think that's true because the best people don't do that. But there is a belief that, you know, you can make snap decisions and multitask. And oftentimes the best marketing changes happen when somebody just looks and observes and says, isn't that strange? Look at what people are doing. I wonder if we can solve that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that sounds like a real interesting observational approach, too. And I realize this is going to sound like sacrilege from two people talking on a marketing podcast who write books about branding and marketing, saying that, you know, using some of that time, not packing every moment full, because I do think there's so many interesting things happening that one danger today is that we are kind of stuffed full of all of these best practices that everybody else is listening to, and it could kind of crowd out real original thinking and discovery. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's you know, two things happen. One is people are so busy multitasking that they're not just observing and they're sitting behind a screen, yeah, and not all the answers are going to be on that screen in front of you. Sometimes, you know, candidly, my father-in-law was in the shopping mall business, and he would take me and walk around the mall, and he'd sit in a certain place and he'd just watch people. And I go, what are you doing? He goes, oh, look, you know. And so part of the success in marketing has always been based on finding a good insight. But, you know, if you ask somebody what's important in any topic, they're going to give you the socially acceptable answer that everyone else is doing. So to get at something that's really important, it's unlikely they'll tell you.
Yeah, you know, I love the story about your father-in-law and just watching people in the mall. That's the kind of story of kind of person on the street consumer insights that it's easy to lose sight of in numbers and data today. And you know, I think many of us have the opportunity to do that same thing. It was probably easy for him to sit and do that. And in a lot of ways, because we're so married to our screens, it can be hard for us as marketers to get out there and see where your people actually
right. If my kids were at a mall, they would be, you know, answering 4,000 Snapchats. They would never, you know, the mall could disappear and they would be so engrossed in what's in front of them. So I do think it's a bit of a older generation thing, but I do think, you know, marketing has always been based on you ever wonder why and smart insights, and getting to them is harder than ever.
Yeah, yeah. So what is a critical step in decoding some of those critical customer insights in a day where we're also crowded with consumer inputs? We have all this information and you know, really there's probably a handful of it that is actually useful in helping us build our brands more
exactly.
effectively.
You know, most people have too much information but not the right type and don't know what to do with it when they get it. You know, yeah. I think one of the things that happened to me when I was a brand manager at Unilever was, you know, despite our best efforts to say how interested in the consumers we were, we ended up getting very fixated at Unilever on what Colgate was doing, what Procter was doing. So if Procter would do something, we'd say, well, what's going on there? If Colgate would do it. And the same when I worked with Pepsi. You know, Pepsi, you know, was very focused on what Coca-Cola was doing. And I think, you know, that's a very easy thing to do. And if, no matter what category you're in, often disruption, if you say the word, doesn't, you know, Gillette did not get upended by Schick.
Right.
And, you know, Coke is not getting beaten. Maybe they're holding their own against Pepsi, but the entire cola category is changing. So uh-huh. they could be still holding their share versus Pepsi, but still losing the game. So I think zooming out and being less of a, you know, we describe it in the book as oftentimes you're playing a lot of tennis. So when I'm bad at tennis, but when I was trying to be a little better, you know, I would try to hit the ball to where the person was not. So I was very focused on my opponent. When you play golf, I play that badly too. You know, yes, you want to not throw a club at your opponent, but, you know, you really need to pay attention to the wind, the ground, the grass, and your own swing and where that ball's going. And I think in business, the same is true in marketing. You know, try to focus on your consumers. What do they want? What are they doing? How are they living? And sooner or later, you're going to notice something that your competitors are not, unless you spend all your time worried about, gee, my competitors just raised prices. Maybe we should do the same.
Well, we at least are like-minded in and I will use sports metaphors with the caveat that I am poor at most of the examples that I give. But I love that because I think that we do end up with these kind of I was going to try to work this in the way we were saying everything else. It's a horse metaphor. I don't ride horses, but it's like the blinders. That we're exactly. So focused on, and that's a good example because you've got that on so you can see the horse in front of you and only that horse. But yeah, the innovation, things are moving too fast to only focus on your lane, on your category.
Exactly. So that's an obvious one, but it's easy when you're outside of it, or it's certainly easy on Monday morning if it's happening over the weekend, but it's really hard to see when you're in the thick of it. And it happens every day. It's also hard to, another challenge we find is that figuring out what's going to happen is not that, I mean, it's hard, but not impossible. Lots of people are talking self-driving cars and all that stuff is going to happen. The million-dollar question, of course, is when. And, you know, if you get the what right but the when wrong, you end up making an old product called the, you know, Apple Newton, which was, you know, the right idea, which is a handheld computer, but they were just off by 20 years and had a few other problems. So, you know, both the what and the when make a difference, but it's really hard to figure out the when.
Do you struggle to keep up with everything that's new with marketing today? Don't get frustrated. Get scrappy. I'd love to bring my Get Scrappy keynote to your next conference or corporate event. With a foot in the classroom and a foot in the field working with clients, I know what works and why, and I can't wait to share it with you during a talk that mixes strategic insights with tactical, practical tips. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So what is, because it is so hard to know, you know, keeping track of what's next and knowing what's there, of closing up that distance. It seems like that's related too to some sort of customer insight. You know, there may be something that we're all talking about, but how do you know when your customers are actually there?
Yeah, my rule of thumb is if you're waiting for them to tell you, by the time they're telling you, they've already voted with their pocketbook. Yep. And they're telling everyone else. So that gets back to where we started. You know, lots of marketers feel that, oh, I just got to ask our customer, what do you want? And if you ask most customers what they want, they'll say, I want the same thing for less money, or, you know, or make it taste a little better. But they're not going to be able to see what's around the corner. I tend to agree with the famous Steve Jobs quote that, you know, the consumer couldn't envision some of the stuff they were thinking of. And so if you ask somebody what they wanted on a computer way back when, it would have been a screen with a little bigger mouse pad. So they would never envision, talking to their computer, or maybe they would. But anyway, so I think, you know, I'm not against asking people, but I also believe in giving them a stimulus, saying, hey, what do you think of this? Creating something, putting something in front of them that gets them, oh, that's sort of interesting. I worked on Dawn dishwashing liquid many, many years ago. And if you ask people what's important in a dishwashing liquid, you know, they'd say, oh, you know, good for your hands. And that was because all the other dishwashing liquid to say, you know, we're good for your hands. But finally, you showed them a greasy pot, and they go, yeah, that's really awful. And if you said Dawn could take grease out of your way, they go, that's different. I'll buy that. So you need to put something in front of them, an idea, a prototype, something that gets them to reframe their own perspective.
So speaking of putting something in front of them and kind of coming back to our earlier point of choice on the consumer side of there used to be, you know, you buy an ad on TV and you stand a pretty good chance of getting in front of a lot of different people with a message about your brand, and you could paint in these broad strokes. But as the consumer has gotten diffused, what is the most important kind of underlying factor, one underlying piece of brand DNA? How do you have kind of something that grounds you and can be a good true north for all the different places you need to be?
Yeah, what I like to do is, because everyone says, oh, you know, I don't really have that much media money, and can you get me something I can just pop up on YouTube that'll go viral? And you know, that is true, that you know, that you don't need to spend a lot of media money anymore. You just need to get something that people want to share. But the strategy for how you win in social media is incredibly easy. You don't have to go to Harvard Business School to get it, which is people only share extraordinary good or extraordinary bad. No one shares average. So if you have a soda that tastes sort of average, you know, you're not getting online and saying, oh, my God, this tastes average. You should try it. So, you know, which is forcing marketers to say, you know, if I just do an OK ketchup or an OK bookstore or an OK retailer, it used to be I was the only one and that was, I guess, OK. But now in a world of choice where you got to get somebody to share something, no one's going to, you know, if I take a plane ride to L.A. and the flight gets there within an hour and they don't lose my bag and they don't go to the wrong airport, it's unlikely I'll say, hey, you got to fly this airline because they got there roughly on time and they didn't get me to the wrong. You know, if they take me to the wrong airport and lose my bag, will you be sure that'll be all over my social media? Or if they do something extraordinary, I might share that. So it's forcing marketers to look at their marketing and say, if we're just okay at everything, if the website's sort of okay and the packaging's okay and product doesn't taste great but it's not bad, you know, that used to be enough if you had some media money to get on the mountain and shout about it, but no longer. So it's forcing marketers to say, it's not about the story. We need to have some part of our experience, the product, the sales, the packaging, the instructions, the, you know, something about it has got to be extraordinary.
Well, and you know, you sit here and you listen to that and it sounds easy. It sounds, oh, well, of course, that's what you do.
Well, the theory is easy, yeah.
Yeah.
Execution's really hard. And that's, you know, what's changed in marketing is lots of people have the same idea at the same time. But the winner is often the one who can just execute it better.
Well, and also I feel like the just okay that you were talking about, that it seems obvious that, of course, we wouldn't want to just be okay. But the context, how that usually presents, is more along the lines of we're checking all of the important boxes, and it feels very methodical. But in the end, you've done, it's the root word of extraordinary, which is ordinary, which is right. You've just done the basics.
Yep, and so much of success is somebody who just goes for that extra cherry on top of the pie.
Yeah.
Just serving a good pie is no longer enough.
Yeah, finding the extra in the extraordinary. Right. So speaking of the extra in extraordinary, who are some of the ones who are doing a great job of standing out at this time when it's difficult to do so?
I just came across one just a couple days ago that I think is a good example of what we've been talking about. So many years ago, this brand, Bose, identified a problem that when you're on an airplane, which is a good place to listen to music, you know, you can hear sort of rumbling, but you don't hear a lot of music. And they invented this idea called noise-canceling headphones, and then they own that category for many years. If you travel a lot, you know, having noise-canceling headphones allows you to get less of a migraine on a plane and maybe even listen to something, be it a movie or music. And I just saw they came out with something interesting. They came out with a pair of glasses, this just broke recently, that is also headphones. In other words, so you're wearing it, there's nothing in your ear, yet because of the noise canceling, you can listen to music just by wearing these glasses. And you can listen to your Siri tell you which way to go, left or right. And what's interesting, it's based on an insight, because when I put, no matter which earbud I put in, you can pay a lot of money, but they're all getting better and better at making your ear feel uncomfortable and also blocking out, you know, everything else around you. And since most of us are talking and navigating and walking around cities, you know, I live in New York City, and, you know, the number of close misses of people being so absorbed and out of it because they have, you know, had something in their ear. And if you said to me, you can wear these glasses, hear everything going around you, but also hear your phone tell you to turn left or right or be on a conference call or listen to music. Yeah. So there's an example of, you know, not just looking at a new headphone and saying we got to make it wider, redder, bigger bass. I mean, yes, they went in and said, how will we solve this problem of getting people to who want to be in touch with their phone and talk and be connected audio, but don't want to be walking around with cotton in their ears? And, you know, it just come out, who knows how successful it'll be, but I think it's an example of, and no one would say to them, gee, can you make a pair of glasses with speakers in the frames? you know, they had to look at an insight, said, you know, people like wearing earbuds of any type, or
right,
but, you know, you don't want to be wearing them as the taxi runs you over.
No kidding. Oh, well, so as we start to wrap up, I do have to ask, as I always do on the show, even though we just talked about a brand, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, you know, I have to say that pretty much Netflix makes me smile quite often, because they have taken over content in such a clever way that the biggest challenge is finding, you know, there's so much great content out there, both original and, but I think they have taken the entertainment business and said, gee, wouldn't it be wild if you could watch whatever you want, whenever you want it? And I think they're delivering on that promise more than other brands. And so whenever I'm in a place where I end up waiting a lot of time, and I pop up my computer or my phone and I go to Netflix, there's always something to keep me entertained for at least 10 minutes.
Well, I think that's true. And I think there's these monolithic online brands that we go to daily and we have such a deep, close personal connection with that we really, I mean, again, I feel like every now and then the news story bubbles up that they're changing their subscriptions, and, you know, there's maybe some headlines and some people shaking their fist. But boy, for me, I don't think anything like that has ever made me stop and think, oh, well, maybe I won't.
Right. So, I mean, there are lots of things like that that are making your life easier every day. But I think, what's changed in the world of entertainment is that there's, you know, it's so much easier to watch wherever you want to watch. And you walk on the subways in New York City today, and half the car is watching a movie at 8 in the morning. Yeah.
So, Alan, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, you can go to metaphors.co, because we help clients try to figure out how they can be extraordinary and then help them do that. Or you can go to shiftaheadbook.com and read some of the lessons I learned as to why it's become so hard today to, you know, not become your father's Oldsmobile.
Well, that is great. And we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Alan, thank you for joining us on Brand.
A pleasure being here. Thanks for inviting me.
And a reminder, if you liked something that you heard on this show, head over to Apple Podcasts. If you think this show is extraordinary, head over there, give us a quick rating and review. Help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.